Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
molecular tour of naphthalene and pyrene. And in these molecular tours, I just talk about a molecule and actually just guide you around the molecule itself. I'm doing two molecules together, because I've actually got to gradually pick up my cognitive recall. Two different molecules can actually go together quite well. You know, you explore one and then the next one seems a little bit easier to understand. Now, why go through molecular tours and all this type of stuff? Sort of like an evolutionary hot pot. A crock pot? I don't know how you describe it. When you get an infection, and your body detects the infection and sends back antibodies and alert signals, your glands swell up, and it goes on to your glands heat up, and at slightly higher temperature, the DNA of finding the correct antibodies to fit it onto it accelerate, and it takes you roughly a day or half a day at high temperature for your body to actually detect. It's an information war. Like, when you get infected, it's an information war, and it goes through high evolution, and you out-evolve the bug. That's how you kill it. That's how you get over a bug. It's not just a battle. It's a it's initially the bug comes in, it's unfettered, it can do what it wants, but eventually all its avenues get cut off and it gets kicked out. So too is, I'm just crossing the road here, so too is this, the actual doing molecular tours and doing quantum physics adds together as a sort of a high pressure educational evolutionary zone. So hopefully as I keep on explaining things, I tend to cut out the ones that don't work as well and gradually introduce quantum mechanics to it. And do you need quantum mechanics to understand molecules? My word, you do. If you have basically, I'm just walking past someone building a house. You can imagine trying to build a house out of little flies. It just wouldn't. There's no. Even if the flies have a sort of an attractive force, i.e. the flies are electrons, and it just wouldn't set up. You need bulky stuff to build a house. You need bulky stuff to build molecule, and the message from quantum central to you out there in education land is that electrons are bulky. The smaller it is, the bulkier it is. And not only are they bulky, they don't have any surfaces, so they're these fantastic building blocks that you can deploy and move. And besides that, they are magical in that they can actually slide through each other. So if you can imagine you're building a house, rather than actually getting the planks of wood all together, you can actually just push them together through each other in space. Indeed, that is true. I know people like to say you can build all of education from your experiences that you get in the playroom. Well, just imagine your playroom is a little bit bigger and you've got these magical toys that you can't... you can magic, you know, your mum doesn't know about it. You can actually stack through each other. That's electrons for you. There's a few other things in that you can give them a twist. And when they twist, they have a nothingness in between them. So you can imagine an electron, give it a twist, and in the very centre is a nothingness. They're still stuck together. You can't pull them apart, but you can twist and actually put them to do all these sorts of things. Now, when you've got that, you get this whole series of things. There's two basic aspects to molecule. So a molecule is a group of atoms together. A group of atoms is a big puffy ball of electrons over top of each other. Oh dear, it's beautiful. I can't believe that. Sorry, just walking past her. I don't understand that particular car. This car's got a crack in its plastic held together with cable ties, and someone's got a huge sticker on it saying, "Don't worry, I cable tied." I don't quite understand what that means. However, we're back here now. What I sort of realised going through as I sort of try and debunk the guff that people are taught, that what people are taught is they're taught guff very sincerely, straight up. They're taught about electron orbitals and transition between orbitals and this big man and Bohr, blah, blah, blah. Almost replacing that initial straight up with another straight up, which isn't guff. Fairly simple thing. You just remove the guff and replace it with the correct stuff. So these big fluffy electrons, if they're sort of in a, if they're got a centralized shape, they're spherical with respect to two nuclei. So in an atom, you've got a nuclei and electrons, and you've got a molecule, you've got two nuclei sitting in a compound of electrons. Some are shared, some are over, some are, you know, all different sorts of things in a nuclei, in a molecule. And if the electrons between the two nuclei are spherically symmetrical, i.e. wheels or like an axle, the two little things can spin with respect to each other. Doesn't make much difference, but if that nuclei is connected to more, your atoms connected to more atoms, your atoms will be able to spin between the two. There's more fun and games which can happen in terms of they can spin, flex, squeeze together. It's sort of like not electrons, a springy sort of beautiful thing. It's super springy and flexible. It can spring and flex it. And that springy and flexing is all the absorption going in to keep the heat in the earth. So that springy and flexing is the carbon dioxide as opposed to oxygen. It's got a bit more flex and spin in it. And that flexy stuff absorbs heat and radiates the heat, keeps us nice and warm at night. Yeah, we're warm and we're cold. Sorry about this. We'll get quieter as I walk down a more quiet street. This is just a hell of a street coming out of the main shopping centre of Blaxland. Yep, if you come out to Australia, you haven't seen anything until you've actually... No, there's a bit of joking there, until you've seen Blaxland. But Blaxland's the local shopping centre. Doing this podcast as I'm walking down. So I hope I've got you interested, and I bet you can't remember the two molecules I was going to do. And the two molecules are... Sorry, I can't actually stop this podcast for you. I can't get my hand... Can't go out and press the pause button, and then when you say it, open up. The two molecules are naphthalene and pyrene. And they're molecules because there's some things going on, but not a lot. There's a lot of quantum mechanics going on. Now, naphthalene, you may have heard it. It's the smell of mothballs. So, in general, mothballs are the things of held around grannies, you know, the old people's homes. It smells very mothballing, or mothball, that idea. So what is naphthalene? Naphthalene's a sort of a waxy type of solid. And the thing is, it sublimates very, very slowly. Sublimates means it turns to gas. So it's a solid crystal, and it slowly doesn't drip. I suppose you could easily heat up naphthalene and you'd just gas yourself to death. But so, especially in Australia, where it's a bit hot, in granny's cupboard, naphthalene comes out. Now, what it does is that naphthalene comes out of the cupboard. Now, the great thing is that your cupboard is not well aired, and so the naphthalene rises up and it suffocates everything. It actually drives. It's a heavy, it's got a huge molecular weight. And it gradually builds up the gas and gases all the moths inside, all the eggs and everything. Great idea. It's the gas chamber, turning your granny's underpants drawer, which has got all the moths balls in it, into a gas chamber. And there may be moths might be able to fly in there, lay a few eggs, but the little ones won't have any oxygen, because the oxygen will float above a sea of naphthalene gas. And so what is this naphthalene gas? Of course, it's pyrene's going to be the second one I talk about. Naphthalene is the juice, the essence of coal. So if you get a lump of coal, and it's a sort of, it's a remarkably light sort of flaky sort of black thing. It's actually quite strong. It hurts you. You can throw someone a lump of coal and it weighs nothing. It's got a very low density. It floats in water. But if you were to heat it up in a jar, get a jar and heat it up, you get this oil coming off, and it's called coal tar. It's a sort of liquidy type of stuff, and you get that coal tar. You know how you tar in a feather? So if you heat up coal, you get this tar, this resiny type of thing coming out of it. And if you heat that up and you put it in a fractionating column, this tar in a fractionating column, the things which have got lower vapor will go up the top. They'll boil off and go up the top of your column. A fractionating column is a still with many, many different temperature layers. And at one particular temperature layer, you'll get, I think, 6-8% of the juice out of your coal juice, right, is naphthalene. Then 2% is pyrene. Pyrene's got I suppose it's got a higher vapor pressure, so you don't get a pyrene ball. So, granny's got put pyrene, you know. Unless, I suppose you market pyrene or things like that in Australia, where the temperature is it's a wee bit higher. So this is great. So this is something. It's something. It comes from coal, and the coal's carbony. So what's it like? Now, it is nature's the smallest graphene molecule you could possibly imagine. Rimmed, that's what naphthalene is. And so what it is if I have a ring of carbon, six carbons in a ring, hexagon of carbons, and I put a cap on it, each carbon can have four bonds. So what it has is each carbon has basically two bonds for the ring. So it's got, each carbon's got four bonds. So the electron configuration of carbon is two inside on the K shell, the inner shell. KL, the next shell, has got four electrons in it. And those four electrons, with a shell capacity of 8, can mean that it can form up to four covalent bonds. And in the hexagon ring, it forms, and we'll get there, it forms two with the ring, along the ring. You can imagine it's a vertices, and the two flat faces form a bond. One at hydrogen. The other one is sort of a half bond, magical bond. Magical bond, it forms in a community, communist. Benzene is communist. It's got communal electrons. Communal electrons, three above and three below, or really six electrons. They're called six pi electrons split, and the six the pi electron actually sits above and below. Just get that into your head. And it forms splint as a sort of like an Oreo. If you Yanks, you need food things, except sort of reverse. The electron is this soft, springy donut. Basically, yeah, I suppose benzene is the donut or bagel of it all. So you have this cloud of electrons. It's called a pi cloud because for some reason we've gone SPD, Bubba, for various shapes. So P orbitals, pi orbitals, I don't know how you do it. It's the electrons with their twist. You remember I said they're big and bulky and they twist. Okay, this is, you know, this is quantum school, mate. So you can just put your Bohr atom back in your pocket. We're no Bohr atoms here. So you're going to need benzene. So how do you make a naphthalene? Hands up, yep, the person in the back, yep, that's right. Naphthalene is made by two benzenes stuck together by two atoms. If you stuck two of these benzenes together by one atom, so they share one atom in space, and in fact, that would be a bit mad, because I would expect that the two hexagons would sit, one rotated 90 degrees to the other. That would be a mad molecule, that would be really interesting. Oh, it would also be just a dreadful, dreadful molecule. Just, I'd hate to be that molecule. And that's one shared electron. This is one shared carbon. This has got two shared carbons. So you've got one hexagon, and then you add on to it another four atoms, and that makes you have 10 atoms all up. Let's see, 10 atoms all up, and so it's probably C10, go for it, H6, maybe naphthalene, sure, I can't really imagine a hydrogen popping in there. Now, what happens is, you know how you've got a party going on of electrons above and below the benzene ring? Now it's got another benzene ring right next to it, it can actually form a plate of pi electrons. And if you think that's great, and that's 12 pi electrons, it's beginning to drizzle a bit here. It's a real drought out here at the moment. I'll be with you in a sec. I just had to get my umbrella out, and then I thought, oh, struth. I've made a mistake. Benzene, I think, has got 3 pi electrons. And naphthalene, which is the two benzenes stuck together by two carbon atoms together, sharing mutual two carbon atoms, has 6. Now, this is great news for me because these electrons act not as an axis but as splint. It splints the entire naphthalene absolutely rock solid flat. So it's like this beautiful shingle of carbon. And when you look at it, it's the very first bit of it's the very first bit of graphite. This is incy wincy graphene. Only a little bit. Probably only 2 atoms in graphene. Now, these electrons, which are having a party as a splint above and below, are actually in full-on graphite, which is millions of these stuck together. As far as the eye can see, if you're shrunk down that small, means that graphite conducts electricity. These electrons are commutative electrons, and they're shared. And so this is kind of covalent bonding. Yep, covalent bonding. They're shared, and they're shared, and they travel throughout graphite. And so I don't know how people teach it, but people, it's sort of like graphite's taught as an exception, but it's, you know, it's not that it's how people add exception rule. It's just graphite's graphite. So naphthalene is pretty interesting in that it's got this sea of electrons. Now, if you want a real sea of electrons, you can't go past metal. Metal's got a sea of electrons, and you can see the sea when you look at the metal. It's shiny. That shiny stuff is the electrons, the sea of electrons. However, this is a two-dimensional sea on the plane of it. Now, that means that naphthalene fluoresces in UV light. So I would really like to see that. Get enough all that shiny UV light and see it have heaps of colours. Basically, fluorine is, it's really good to actually see the the fluorescence. So at that point, now let's do some counting again. We've got two benzenes with six carbons each, six together. You've got 12 carbons, but two are double counted. So that's 12 plus two of those 12s are double counted. So if I'm double counting, you know, sort of like if you're getting an order together, something like that, you know, to subtract two. So it gives you 10 without counting. You can go and visualize it in your head, go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus four. We go 6 and 6, except I've double counted two and it's one. Because that's going to be, if you can wait for it, God, I'll make sure I'm not right over here. We're going up to pyrene. Pyrene, sort of like it. Well, I'm interested in naphthalene because you can make heaps of drugs out of naphthalene. Important heart drugs, so I'm interested in it and we'll try and report on that further down the track. But I'm not going to do that because it's nice and simple. Simple carbon, some benzene, quantum mechanics. There's your house, your father, so to speak. Yeah, that's it. And so we're now into pyrene. So if naphthalene is made by sticking two benzenes together, pyrene is made by sticking two naphthalenes together. That is right. When you look at it, you can count four hexagons. Naphthalene's got two, benzene's got one, four hexagons, and there, in terms of the atoms shared, there's each in this case, each ring is sharing three atoms. Let me work this out. I can't visualize it. Yeah, three atoms. Is that right? Yeah, three atoms. And it is sharing three atoms, and it's together. So you can imagine two hexagons, right, with the vertices pointing down, the flats left and right, because you've got a flat vertical in the center, and then shifted slightly up and to the right and across, and lead, you know, can you imagine lifting that up and reprinting it? You've got four hexagons. So that's just, you can either go around counting the ones, or you can say I might be wrong in this one. Okay, there's a limit to what I can do. Okay, so there's four. That's 24 carbons. Of those 24, because this is before I've actually planted them, four are double counted, so you subtract four, and two are double counted, so you subtract three. So four and three, 24. I think there's 14 carbons in there. I don't know. Just working it out. And then the ring of that is all on the very edge, it's got all oxygen atoms. So I don't know what I said. Naphthalene was I find this is hard to believe. 24 minus 10 is 14. So it's 6 and 4. 2 times 6 and 4, 10, 14, and naphthalene had 10. Yeah, that's about right. 10, that's 4 more carbons. That's a bit hard to believe. I can't believe that. I'll have to go back and do it. Can't podcast and think at the same time. But it's a good thing. Now, the pyrene is the same deal. However, it's getting closer to carbon, graphene. So graphene is just carbon, hexagon, two-dimensional, sheet. This is two-dimensional, and it's got, that's really irritating there. I got that right. Okay, this has got a sheet, Oh yeah, so I think it's right. I'm just doing the maths in my head. Unfortunately, I can't help stop myself to doing it. This. The pyrene has got this big flat region inside it, which is splintered down. That is, the pi electrons act as a splint and makes, and the actual orbitals themselves are pushed to provide the pi electrons, and the orbitals are pushed into something called an sp2, which is a flat connect way. The connections are in the it provides out of the plane a binding electron for the splint, and in the plane binding electrons to other atoms. So the binding electrons are the bonds are pushed into the plane, and the additional bond acts to split the molecule. And having a big flat plane of electrons which can actually travel up and down the molecule, it gives it these properties. Now, I don't think there's any organic compounds which use pyrene. There's obviously some organic compounds, drugs made out of coal. But it's sort of an important thing to get into your head. Now, the memory thing for me was to remember naphthalene, pyrene, as a sort of a bedrock to actually tell you about electrons, quantum mechanical view of electrons. But what I'm going to do is, as I'm walking home, do the next memory thing, which is recall the periodic table. And these people are people who have listened as me struggling. So embarrassed, I'll get in and I'll go, oh, and you can see me think and work through. So what's happened here is I can see different memory techniques come across. So, is this helping me memorize things? I'm not quite sure. I'm really not quite sure what this all means in terms of rehab. So, hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorite, neon, sodium, magnesium, aluminium, silicon, phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, argon, potassium, calcium, scandium, titanium, vanadium, chromium, manganese. G'day, mate. Iron, cobalt, nickel, copper, zinc, gallium, germanium, arsenic, bromine, krypton, rubidium, strontium, yttrium, zirconium, niobium, molybdenum, technetium, ruthenium, rhodium, palladium, silver, cadmium, indium, tin, antimony, tellurium, iodine, xenon, francium. Oh no, what am I doing? What the heck? Oh yeah. Oh yeah, cesium, sorry, bloody hell. Cesium, barium, what the heck am I doing that for? Cesium, barium. So we go through the lanthanides. Lanthanum, cerium, praseodymium, neodymium, promethium, samarium, europium, goldium, whatever it is, terbium, dysprosium, there you go, holmium, erbium, thulamium, yttrium, or that's terbium, it's called what, terbium. Now then getting up, lutetium, hafnium, tantalum, rhenium, iridium, platinum, gold, mercury, thallium, lead, bismuth, polonium, astatine, radon, francium, radium, actinium, thorium, proactinium, uranium, neptunium, plutonium, americium, curium, berkelium, californium, einsteinium, and fermium. There you go. It's still hard, you still get memory techniques, but when you make errors, you make an error a little bit in advance or a little bit before, and you can sort of see it coming into your mind. So eventually, the value of the periodic table for memory is going down. So I'm now moving on to the amino acids and some basic chemicals, trying to memorize them. And you think, oh, what's the benefit of it? Now, there is a benefit because you keep on describing it or talking it through, and eventually you start to evolve, as I said at the start here, evolve away from methods of description which are not helpful. So that the Bohr atom is not a very helpful way. The quantum mechanical one is, it's true. Like, this is what you get out. It's true because it looks like that, it works like that. It has to be splintered. Basically, I'm sort of evolving a more quantum mechanical friendly way of describing these things rather than the classic on the board variety. Now, of course, when I get back, I'll have to actually be recalibrated to give those things the heck's going on here. No. Okay, we're not going to be attacked. I'm not going to be attacked by parrots again, but they're circling. Thanks a lot for listening. That was with a quantum mechanical source served up for your delight, naphthalene, pyrene, and for dessert, the periodic table. Thank you for eating chemistry. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.